Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Geopolitical Biweekly Report for January 12, 2026. I'm Phil Antler. A new security strategy for the United States delivers a strong message for investors. Confluence Chief Market Strategist Patrick Fearon-Hernandez joins us today to fill us in. Patrick, the national security strategy released by the government last month is notable for its contrast with prior reports. Would you call the new report a major departure?
Well, hi, Phil. And as always, thanks for having me on the program. And yes, this is indeed a major departure. The 2025 National Security Strategy, which we refer to as NSS 2025, is shorter, sharper, and explicitly reorders U.S. priorities, elevating the Western Hemisphere above the Indo-Pacific and Europe while reviving the Monroe Doctrine and even extending it. That's a clear break from the U.S. hegemony as practiced during the Cold War and in the period of globalization after 1991. This shift is widely documented. The official White House PDF lays out the principles, priorities, and regional chapters, coverage by defense and legal outlets, highlights the revival of the Monroe Doctrine and the new messaging toward Europe, and analysts note a transactional America First tone compared with earlier strategies. So yes, this is very different.
And I would imagine that America's national interests are defined differently than in prior reports.
Yeah, NSS 2025 frames the U.S.'s vital national interest around sovereignty, natural rights, and citizens' well-being. The document echoes the broad formulation of the famous NSC 68 document of the past. In other words, preserving the U.S. as a free nation. However, the language has been modernized to emphasize sovereignty and prioritizing Americans' welfare. That's distinct from Global Commons formulations prioritizing worldwide access and regional stability in recent strategy documents. In practice, this all shows up as flexible realism, less social engineering abroad, more restraint on interventions, yet more assertiveness where U.S. prosperity and security are at stake. In other words, economic leverage, industrial base, energy, and finance issues. This reframing is explicit in the White House text and as summarized by outside observers.
Patrick, have the grounds for military action changed?
Well, the document signals reluctance toward broad, values-driven interventions, but it widens justification for targeted actions that defend sovereignty, deter threats to the homeland, and protect economic security. In other words, supply chains, energy, finance, etc. The Western Hemisphere is singled out for denying non-hemispheric competitors military or strategic footholds, creating a wider rationale for operations perceived as homeland adjacent. The recent U.S. capture of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro illustrates this kind of targeted, time-bounded use of force. It's very much on the table under this strategy's logic, even as the administration describes it as a law enforcement action tied to narco-terrorism indictments.
Well, I want to get back to Maduro in just a moment, but first, the report calls for, among other things, stopping mass migration into the United States, reviving the U.S. industrial base, restoring energy dominance, and growing the U.S. dominance in finance. My impression is that a close reading of this report provides a clear explanation for many U.S. government policy decisions over the past year. Is that your impression as well?
Yes, it is. The priorities listed, such as ending mass migration, reindustrialization, energy dominance, and financial preeminence, map closely to policy actions we've seen, such as proclamations and executive orders on energy dominance, defense industrial reform, and hemispheric operations targeting narco networks. Energy production data corroborate the dominance push. U.S. crude output hovered near record highs in late 2025, while policy proclamations and think tank analysts emphasize drilling, nuclear revival, and domestic supply chains. Taken together, the strategy's text and last year's actual actions form a consistent policy arc.
Well, you mentioned the report lays out new regional priorities, and I wanted to go into this a little bit more by focusing on Maduro and how the capture of the Venezuelan president fits within these priorities. Could you go into that a little bit more?
Well, the Western Hemisphere is now seen as the top regional priority. NSS 2025 pledges to reassert the Monroe Doctrine, redeploy forces to the Americas, curtail foreign adversaries' footholds, control migration and drug flows, and secure critical minerals. The Maduro seizure, branded Operation Absolute Resolve, is cast by officials as enforcing narco-terrorism indictments and signaling U.S. primacy within the hemisphere. Media and official live updates detail the capture, legal proceedings in New York, and rhetoric about the U.S. running Venezuela temporarily. All actions aligned with the strategy's hemispheric focus and deterrent messaging to Cuba and other nations.
This action in Venezuela does seem a little bit like nation building, though. Does the concept of nation building show up in the report?
Well, the report disavows classic nation building. Rather, it emphasizes respect for sovereignty and restraint in social engineering abroad. Yet, there's an internal tension. The hemispheric action implies stronger U.S. involvement to stabilize the region and protect U.S. interests, which can resemble state shaping in practice. The authors explicitly criticize past efforts to impose liberal values, but still assert U.S. pressure on regimes to respect core natural rights. The Maduro operation underscores that while broad occupation is disfavored, short, decisive interventions may occur, framed as law enforcement or strategic denial rather than nation building. Analysts have flagged this doctrinal contradiction.
So you do see inconsistencies in this report.
Oh, yes. Yeah, three in particular stand out. First, sovereignty versus intervention. The NSS promises restraint, yet the Venezuela action and threats toward other hemispheric states blur lines between sovereignty and coercive influence. Second, hegemony rejection versus dominance in finance and energy. The document repudiates global hegemony, but seeks to preserve and grow U.S. dominance in finance, restore energy dominance, and reindustrialize all mechanisms of power projection. And third, lowering Europe's priority versus demanding more from allies. Europe is downgraded in terms of its priority, yet Washington pressures NATO and the EU to pay more, to regulate, and align with U.S. preferences, creating friction that could undermine transatlantic cohesion.
Well, Patrick, as you mentioned, Asia, Europe, the Middle East, and Africa are listed now as lower priorities than the Western Hemisphere. Wanted to ask a couple of specific questions. Are you more or less confident upon reading this report that the U.S. will defend Taiwan in the event of Chinese aggression?
The document still underscores deterrence by denial in the Indo-Pacific and highlights Taiwan's strategic importance. With recent U.S. arms sales and support in the fiscal year 2026 National Defense Authorization Bill pointing to continuity. Now, that said, the NSS's hemispheric pivot and emphasis on trade rebalancing could raise ambiguity about the threshold for direct intervention. Official statements on recent PLA drills near Taiwan reaffirmed the U.S.'s opposition to unilateral changes by force and call for restraint, maintaining the traditional strategic ambiguity rather than an explicit defense commitment to Taiwan. So I would say I'm moderately confident that the U.S. would defend Taiwan against Chinese aggression, but not more confident than under previous frameworks. The signals are mixed.
Do you detect in this report a less robust relationship with Israel and a lower sensitivity to divisions occurring in the Middle East?
The Middle East is deprioritized, partly due to the push for U.S. energy resurgence. The text pledges less hectoring on human rights, encourages regional self-reliance, and frames Iran policy around pressure. But overall, it implies reduced day-to-day U.S. involvement. Analysts describe this as conditional support to Israel, with higher expectations for Israeli strategic independence and a lower U.S. appetite for prolonged entanglements. At the same time, legislation and statements from U.S. officials highlight strong ties and sanctions pressure on Iran, so the relationship isn't weak. It's just reframed with less sensitivity to intra-regional divisions and more emphasis on energy and security autonomy.
I want to remind our listeners at this point, as we draw to the end of our discussion today, that your written report, which is available on the Confluence website, contains a very useful chart contrasting differences with past annual security strategies, some of which we have not discussed in the past few minutes. For our purposes now, though, I'd like to move on to some basic investment implications. While the changes in security strategy that you've identified are significant, they won't seem, at least I don't think they'll seem, particularly surprising to those of us who are familiar with Confluence investment strategy and the Confluence attention to geopolitics. It's clear that Confluence has been making for some time investment recommendations to align with the new formal U.S. security strategy that was officially unveiled last month. Certainly, your emphasis during the past year on European stocks, particularly defense stocks, and your affinity for precious metals have both been rewarded. Are you still enthusiastic about those particular trends?
We are. The NSS's tough tone toward Europe, combined with pressure to boost defense outlays and to deregulate the economy, would support ongoing European defense and infrastructure spending, which is constructive for select European equities, especially defense contractors. Meanwhile, the policy volatility and geopolitical uncertainty sustain demand for precious metals as risk hedges. These themes continue to be consistent with our prior positioning.
And are there any newer investment avenues that you feel merit further attention after studying this new national security strategy?
Yeah, there are several. For example, there's U.S. large-cap multinationals, especially in energy, technology, and digital services. NSS 2025 elevates economic statecraft and aims to back U.S. firms against foreign regulatory headwinds, and we think that should favor scale and global reach. Another example is defense industrial-based suppliers and enablers in the U.S. and allied countries, given executive actions to accelerate procurement, modernize acquisitions, and revive capacity. The beneficiaries should include firms able to deliver at speed and scale. Yet another example is critical minerals chains in the Americas. After all, Latin America's lithium, copper, and rare earths are central to the hemispheric strategy and supply chain security. Targeted investments in processing and refining may see policy tailwinds and public-private financing. A final example is select U.S. energy producers and infrastructure. The policy signals on energy dominance complement already high U.S. output. Midstream and services companies are positioned for steady cash flows if production stays elevated.
Well, will there be new investment opportunities in Latin America emerging soon?
Likely, yes. The NSS envisages redeploying attention and resources to the Americas, from migration and drug interdiction to critical minerals development and supply chain repatriation. Multilaterals and Western partners are already funding downstream value add, such as refining and processing projects, and Washington signals preference for hemispheric sourcing. This could open equity stakes, long-term offtake agreements, and infrastructure financing across lithium, copper, and rare earths in countries such as Argentina, Chile, Brazil, Bolivia, and beyond.
Thank you, Patrick. The title of this week's report is Investment Implications of the New U.S. National Security Policy. You can find a link to the written report on the Confluence webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. This information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.